Hello once again, fellow workers. My name is fellow worker Noah. I'm with the Tacoma branch of the Industrial Workers of the World. This is WOB Radio, a radio show about working class struggles, organizing campaigns, labor news, environmental justice, social justice, and much more. I'm joined today by Elizabeth Burton and Stacey Oakes. They are both members of Seattle Cruise Control, and they are here to talk to us about an exciting event coming up on April 6th. Could you go ahead and introduce yourselves for our fellow listeners?
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Burton.
Hi, I'm Stacey Oakes. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Would either one of you like to start off and give a little bit of an introduction to what Seattle Cruise Control is all about?
Sure, I can do that. Seattle Cruise Control is an all-volunteer organization working to address the multiple harms of cruise, educating the public and elected officials, advocating for an economy that supports healthy communities and planet. We collaborate with cruise activists regionally, nationally, and internationally. We have a website, seattlecruisecontrol.org. We came together in 2019 when a number of residents concerned about the Port of Seattle's plans to build a new third cruise ship terminal, we already had two, near Pioneer Square were going on. The port dropped plans for the additional terminal during the pandemic, but unfortunately, traffic has dramatically increased since the pandemic ended. Port commissioners and staff continue to promote cruise as an economic engine while ignoring its impacts to health, climate, air, water, and marine life, as well as the exploitation of onboard workers and coastal communities that cruise imposes.
And speaking on the labor exploitation, I know that there was another organization that you were hoping to partner with, many of whom were Filipino workers who happened to work in the cruise industry, correct?
Well, actually, they're Filipino fishermen. Part of that connection is the way that that treatment seems to kind of cross between professions. And so there's a lot of parallels between the treatment we're seeing of the cruise workers and these Filipino fishermen. And there's also a connection because about one third of all cruise workers are Filipinos. And so we'd be happy to share about that, even though that they're not able to be here with us today.
Yeah, absolutely.
So basically what happened is there's a group, and I believe there are about 24 fishermen that this affected, but the group is calling themselves the United Six Fishermen because there are four individuals who are kind of putting themselves at risk in order to be able to speak out about their experience in the hopes of getting what they're owed for one thing, but also to keep this from happening to other people. Always, as we keep any labor exploitation in the dark, it's allowed to continue. And so we have to talk about it when it's there. These fishermen were given 6 month to 1 year contracts to come and do fishing here in the US, and it's for McAdams Fish. And after 4 months, when they docked to unload a load of albacore tuna, all of the captains left the ship, and these fishermen were left stranded there. They didn't come prepared with US visas. It's not part of what they thought they were coming here to do. So they weren't able to safely disembark and seek work elsewhere. And to this point, they haven't received proper compensation. And not only have they not been paid, but they were put into debt because of the way these contracts were structured. So they're being charged for fishing equipment and bait and fuel and internet and the groceries while they're not able to work, not due to their own fault. So they are actively trying to seek justice as well as spread awareness. And I would hope folks can go and look them up on social media. Again, that's the Justice for United Six is how you can look them up. And just to kind of articulate where we really saw some of those parallels is going to be the most stark when we look at how cruise workers were treated when the onslaught of COVID and the pandemic hit. So in 2020, a lot of folks, this is the first time they really thought about what a viral illness spreading trap that cruise ships can be. But cruise ships had a ton of COVID spreading around on them. And so all these ships are out and they kind of just had to stop. and they weren't allowed to dock places. And so what the companies eventually did is they sent all of the passengers home. And in order to comply with laws, they had to do that by private transportation, which can, be a little expensive. They can't just put them on airplanes with other people if they had COVID. So the cruise companies paid to go ahead and send all the customers home, but they didn't want to spend the money to send home the workers. So you had hundreds of thousands at first, and as the months wore on, it continued to be tens of thousands of workers just stranded at sea, not having any idea when they'd be allowed to go home. And like there's a lot of pressure, there's a lot of anxiety in that, and thinking you don't know when you get to go home see your family in the midst of a global pandemic. And while they're stranded there without having passengers, all of the service, the cruise companies decided, well, we only need this small handful of you to keep the ship going. So just that handful is going to get paid. So the other majority of the workers were not getting paid for these months while they're stuck on the ship. That means families back home aren't getting money that they need to survive. There was reports of suicides. There were people jumping overboard to try to get away. People were being charged for basic amenities while they were stuck on the ship, through no fault of their own. And all the while, cruise CEOs were making multi-million dollar bonuses. So we know there was money there if they decided to choose to treat these workers as human beings. And so that's where we see a lot of those similarities to how these Filipino fishermen were treated, and in general, how it feels like a lot of overseas Filipino workers get treated. And just another kind of aspect to pull into it is that Philippines is actually one of the top five countries affected by climate change. So these ships are also that they're kind of having to go out and work on are also harming their homelands at the same time that they're kind of getting this treatment from this industry.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine. I know a couple of friends who work in the airline industry, for example, which definitely has like a higher union concentration of their workers in proportion to like their workplaces. And you think working on an airplane, you have long hours, you're in a confined space. They almost seem like between, cruise ships and airplanes, kind of similar work conditions. But then also you add in, oh no, this isn't like a few hours or several hours. This can be days, this can be weeks. You're stuck with a bunch of different passengers and with an extremely demanding work environment on, and then add the exploitation on top of that, and you have one heck of a crucible of a workforce. Now, you did touch on the environmental impact, and I know that the rally taking place on April 6 is really going to touch on that aspect as well. Would either one of you like to talk a little bit about that as well? Because I've also heard of a lot about the environmental impacts of things like boating traffic affecting whale populations and things like that.
Yeah, I can start on that, and Stacy can fill in with other aspects. So I'd like to start by talking about the climate pollution. First of all, I want to say something about the size of Seattle's cruise sector. Unless you live near the downtown cruise docks and see the boats on a regular basis, you might not have any idea, even if you live in Seattle, just how gigantic this is. It makes the effects kind of a little easier to understand. So this year, for example, we're going to have about 830,000 passengers, cruise passengers, of whom about 700,000 will fly, get here. They're going to start their cruises by flying here and, of course, flying home again. So both airplanes and cruise ships, neither one of them is good for the climate. And in fact, cruise ships per passenger mile are even worse than airplanes, about twice as bad as airplanes in causing climate change. The greenhouse gas emissions from a single season of Seattle-based cruises and the accompanying air travel accounts for a third as much climate pollution as the entire city of Seattle produces in a year. It's about 2 million metric tons for the cruise sector and about 6 million for the city of Seattle. The ships themselves, just to give people an idea, these are massive floating resorts. At the first sailing on April 6th, next Saturday, when our rally is, we'll be doing that in the shadow of the Norwegian Bliss, the first cruise ship of the season. It's 20 stories tall and carries almost 6,000 passengers and crew. And there will be about 275 sailings this year. It's funny, Time magazine did a survey last year And the respondents to the survey, about 50% of them thought that cruising was an eco-friendly way to travel. And unfortunately, that's probably because the ads for cruise ships show gorgeous, pristine-looking environments. And you think, oh, the ship just glides through the water. It doesn't really take a lot of energy. But, you know, nothing could be further from the truth. If you're traveling the world, dragging an entire resort around with you, this is not going to be easy on, you know, resource use and effects on the natural world. There was an article just a few days ago in the Seattle Times about the effects of drought caused both by El Nino, but a lot exacerbated by climate change. So some of them are farmers. And I think these were mostly regional effects. So farmers are getting reduced crops, reduced pasture output, forests. In our forest, there's more tree death, more disease and insect damage. These lead to more wildfires, which also damage crops. Several Washington state wineries lost cr their crops entirely because the grapes were tainted by wildfire smoke. Fisheries are affected. Fish face disease and famine due to reduced stream flow and warmer waters. Ocean fisheries are affected. Climate change brings warmer waters and acidification. And in addition to air pollution, Seattle's cruise ships dump 4 billion gallons of toxic waste into the ocean each season. And I want to say something about the effects of climate change. They are not felt equally across the globe. So 92% of excess carbon in the atmosphere has historically come from rich countries in the global north, but 98% of the deaths from extreme weather events caused by climate change occur in the global south. And, you know, some of this carbon is from people taking vacations, people from countries making outsized climate impacts, and the ships, as Stacey has mentioned, take advantage of the cheap labor from countries like the Philippines, and those are the countries most impacted by climate change.
Yeah, I mean, that is just such a laundry list. And I can see how the cruise industry kind of ties into all of that with, you know, wastewater and other pollution going out into open waters, affecting marine wildlife, you know, affecting coastal marine environments as well, which I know are particularly sensitive to ecological changes. I mean, yeah, it kind of sounds like the cruise industry has a whole bundle of trouble kind of tied up into it. But like you said, a lot of the advertising kind of paints this very greenwashed image of what the cruise industry actually is. And so this event coming up on April 6th is essentially protesting all of these different issues right at the beginning of cruise season, right? I mean, you talked about the Norwegian vessel that's coming in. I mean, 20 stories in height. Yes?
Just for the record, it has nothing to do with Norway. It's called the Norwegian Bliss, and the cruise line is called Norwegian Cruise Lines. It's not connected to Norway.
Right. As a fellow Norwegian, I concur with that statement. But this rally coming up on April 6th, could you give us some details about what the event's going to look like? Heard that you have some really cool community partners tag teaming along for this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be Saturday, April 6th, and it's called Speak for the Seas Kids Call Out Cruise Rally and Press Conference. And it's happening on the opening day of the Seattle, Alaska cruise season. And we're really trying to center the voices of youth during this event. So our press conference will be with 7 to 9 year olds. They'll be dressed in sea creature costumes, playing characters, and they'll be doing rhymes about why the cruise industry is so harmful and why it has to go. We also have a youth chant leader. We're going to have a live band. There'll be a performance by the Red Rebels. We have beautiful art. We have great speakers. And it's just going to be a very family-friendly event. The event is actually endorsed by over two dozen youth, climate, indigenous, health, social justice, and marine protection organizations. I know this is going on Radio Tacoma, so just a plug, a handful of those organizations are from Tacoma, the Water Warrior Council, Native Daily Network, 350 Tacoma, La Resistencia, and Climate Alliance of the South Sound. And we're just really excited to be partnering with so many different organizations on this event, because another kind of form of greenwashing is to pretend that the only people that care about the harms of cruise are environmentalists, right? as we've already talked about, in just a short time, it impacts workers, it impacts the water, it impacts so many different things, it impacts our health. And so being able to come together with all these different types of organizations really helps to dispel that myth and show that so many people care about stopping the harms of the cruise industry for so many different reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's really cool that like kids are getting involved in this as well, because even when I was, even when I was in the single digits, and maybe this is because I had an environmental scientist for a dad, but like I was very aware of, oh, the climate is changing. Oh, things like pollution are actually bad, and these are going to have like long-term impacts, and I want to do something about that.
I wanted to add that among the many concerns we've already mentioned, another one is that destination communities are totally overwhelmed. Town populations can explode with ship arrivals. So, for example, we work with activists in Sitka and Juneau and other stops along the Seattle to Alaska cruise route. When cruise ships arrive, the internet crashes, right? It's like, I don't know, and people can't get their work done. The streets are so congested and buses are full. Locals can't, they lose access to their own town. We have a friend who lives underneath the helicopter route from the airport to a nearby glacier, and all summer long, from 8 in the morning to late at night, she has helicopters thrumming over her house. So it's not good on the other end either.
And just to amplify that too, the health impacts. If you're in one of these destination communities that get a bunch of ships at once. So, I mean, just one of these ships is putting out so much particulate matter and other toxic stuff, that it's, I forget the equivalent of how many thousands of diesel trucks
I think
that it's equal to.
34,000.
Yeah, so 30, one ship is equal to 34,000 diesel trucks sitting and idling. And you're looking at some of the towns in Alaska have 4 and 5 ships that come at once and they sit there all day. And so all of that toxic pollution is happening all season long for the people that live in those towns, and for the workers. If you're working on the ship, you're getting that exposure as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine, a lot of those cruise lines tend to run through small, what we think of as smaller towns, but they have really advantageous port areas. So, having tens of thousands of people come through over a handful of months, I mean, I could see pictures of like grocery stores starting to run thin, other local resources like power and Wi-Fi and gasoline starting to run out. And then suddenly the cruise industry dries up and the season ends, and suddenly it's back to, the original background energy of what the local economy is. I can't imagine what the shock of that must be like for somebody living in a community like that. So, yeah, I think that this event that's coming up on April 6th is really cool. Now, is the Seattle City Council or any other kind of like governmental organization aware that's going on?
We reached out to local elected officials, city, county, and state representatives. So they know what's going on. I'm not sure any of them are coming, but we invited them.
And just to make a note too, the biggest decision makers about this isn't actually the Seattle City Council. It's actually the Port of Seattle, and the Port of Seattle commissioners who are elected. They're the ones that get to oversee the cruise industry, even though this industry can have a really outsized impact on the climate goals of the city of Seattle and King County.
I can imagine the kind of conflict there, because I know that a lot of port agencies, like for example, here in the Port of Tacoma, they definitely stress things like environmental protection and trying to reclaim the environment while also developing a bunch of industry in this area at the same time. So you kind of have this catch-22 of, well, we want to look green and we really want to protect the environment, but also we gotta make sure that we're doing business however that business is conducted. As long as we don't, have the EPA running after us, then whatever's happening down here is fine. So I can imagine the Port of Seattle might be in a similar situation where they're like, well, we want to be really green, but on the other hand, the cruise industry brings in a lot of money and a lot of traffic.
This is true, right? It's kind of one of those like conflicting priorities. The Port of Seattle, in fact, claims that they aim to be the greenest port in all of North America, which in my mind, the greenest port in North America wouldn't have a cruise ship terminal. But it's really interesting that along with that goal of being the greenest port, there'll also be goals in their century agenda where they wanted to double and rapidly expand airline flights and cruise and freight. And you clearly can't keep expanding all of those things while also decreasing your emissions from what they call scope three, or the actual emissions from ships and airplanes. You can't keep increasing the business, making little band-aids like putting a solar panel on a giant cruise ship, or kind of these little tiny fixes, and being able to make those goals. We also see a lot of false solutions being named. Something you might be familiar with in Tacoma is the concept of LNG, or liquefied natural gas, which is fracked gas. It's a fossil fuel. But one of the big green claims for cruise companies right now is, well, we're sustainable because we're running on LNG, which we all, of course, know to not be a green solution. But the Port of Seattle will sit on these webinars, listen to the cruise companies say this, and not interject or give the other side of the reality of LNG, which numerous studies have proven is actually worse for the climate than a lot of the other traditional marine fuels.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have personal friends who were very much involved in protesting against the development of that LNG facility here in Tacoma. A couple of them actually who were arrested because they had chained themselves to the construction equipment and had later gotten bailed out through a couple of environmental organizations down here that supported them in their actions. But yeah, I mean, on one hand, you definitely don't want them using dirtier fuels, but LNG is still LNG, you know? It comes from fracking. Fracking is still fracking. It still has a huge environmental impact. So even if it does have a quote unquote slightly smaller impact on CO2 emissions, you also have to think of natural gas emissions coming from that as well, which are much worse for the atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, even the World Bank, which is not known to be a tree-hugging organization, has come out with a report that says ships should n that LNG is not a climate solution, that ships should be running the cleanest fuels currently available and working to directly transition to zero emissions technologies. That this is the use of LNG is actually delaying rather than accelerating that transition.
Yeah. I mean, I
But
can't
there
imagine a cruise ship hoisting the sails, especially when it's 20, 20 stories high. But on the other hand, I imagine that there are other ways they could implement green energy in some way, shape, or form, or at the very least, try to effectively compensate for whatever damage they cause. But it sounds like there's a lot of damage nonetheless.
Yeah. Well, there is a place in the world that's experimenting with cruise ships that are closer to being sustainable, and that's Norway. That's the actual Norway. They passed a federal law that cruise ships, at least starting in a couple of heritage fjords, would be required. The only cruise ships that would be allowed into these fjords would need to be both zero emissions and zero discharge as well. So no pollutants into the air, no pollutants into the water. And cruise ship companies are rising to the challenge and actually building such ships, but they don't carry 6,000 people or 10,000 people. They carry a few hundred. And so they're much smaller.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so we kind of talked about the experience of the workers during COVID and, what happens when it's convenient to just strand these workers. But we actually didn't really talk about what is the regular working conditions. What are the workers that are going to be on this season's ships kind of dealing with? Because it's actually, I was shocked when I learned how these conditions are, and it just felt so exploitative and unimaginable to myself to think about working under these conditions. So you're looking at the workers making potentially as little as $2 an hour while working 10 to 14 hour shifts each day. They work 7 days a week for their entire deployment, which is 7 to 10 months at a time. So for 7 to 10 months, imagine never having a single day off and working those long hours, not having any protection from workplace harassment or abuse. There's nowhere to go if for some reason they decide to just not pay your wages. And so this is kind of the situation that folks are in is not only are you doing all of this hard work, but potentially getting as little as $2 an hour. And how that's determined is by pretty racist means. What it's going to do is it's determined by the country that you're from. That kind of puts you in what type of job are we going to give you, and how much money are you going to get paid?
Wow, that is incredibly exploitative. And I mean, I'm not super familiar with the labor law of many other countries, especially the countries where cruise lines predominantly recruit from. But I can only imagine that trying to hold your employer accountable, let alone trying to form a union, would be incredibly difficult in those situations. Any kind of means for the employees to kind of address grievances must be incredibly limited under those conditions, not to mention the long work hours and the poor pay. Something in the IWW that we have been advancing since at least the 1970s is something that we often refer to as green unionism or environmental unionism, where workers who are trying to better their wages, hours, and conditions can also look at the environmental conditions of their work and go, I work in an industry that has a pretty big environmental impact or the potential to do so. What are some ways through our organizing that we can pressure our employers for better environmental protections? You know, try to reduce our output of greenhouse gases, make them sign a climate pledge, do something about it. And I think that the cruise industry is kind of one of those unique situations where, you know, on one hand, given the conditions, it would be incredibly difficult to organize, especially if you are beholden to the wages set by another country's labor laws. But on the other hand, if such a movement of workers within that industry could confront things like poor pay, poor conditions, and the environmental conditions, I think that that would be pretty powerful, especially for the workers of the cruise industry.
It would be pretty powerful. I'm not sure how realistic with under the current conditions it is, unfortunately, because the captain could decide to just send you home if they feel like you're causing trouble on the ship, and then you're missing out on the rest of your pay, or maybe even all of your pay if they decide not to give it to you. Again, there's not much recourse. There's also these workers are hired through third parties, and a lot of times the contracts are in English, despite English not being these workers' first language. So there'll be little clauses in there that they might not have understood or read at the time. And this is again another parallel that we saw with the United Six Fishermen, to where doing certain things might be against their contract and could, like, say, invalidate their pay. And they weren't just aware of being able to fully understand that because of how the contracts were put in front of them. And there's another aspect that Elizabeth can speak to about kind of why this behavior is allowed.
Yeah, I wanted to get to that. So, we've been talking about all these terrible conditions that cruise ships inflict on the world. How does this happen? Cruise is a $1 billion global industry, and it's one of the most polluting and exploitative in the world. And these two facts are actually directly related. You know, how do they get away with this? They get away with it because of what are called flags of convenience. So, company headquarters may be in Florida, but the ships are registered in the Bahamas, Liberia, Panama, places that have weak to non-existent labor and environmental and safety protections. So they're flying under these flags where they can get away with anything. It also means the companies don't pay any US taxes. And so many of the harms that we're talking about, certainly including the labor exploitation, is a direct result of this.
Yeah, it's outsourcing both the problem of poor working conditions and the environmental issues internationally, which we've seen in a lot of different industries that have particular harm to the environment. That's a really tough situation. I mean, what are some of the aspects of the cruise industry that organizations such as yours hope to change in specific, like environmental protections that could be put into place? working condition standards that could be put into place, anything like that?
So we have kind of a mixed answer for that. We don't think that the cruise industry is reformable, like in its current form. You know, we like what we're hearing about the small, clean ships that are in Norway. So we think that other countries should say crews can only come here if you are take care of all these problems. And that's what we're kind of pushing for the Port of Seattle to do. Like, until crews is cleaned up, just reduce the number of ships every year. And, you know, if make it so that if cruise ships come here, they need to be better behaved. In the meantime, there are some things that we think the Port of Seattle could do. Do you want to take those, Stacey?
Sure. I mean, just a couple of them is that there's on the discharge, like what we're talking about the water pollution. Some of the most toxic parts of that water pollution. I mean, there's the sewage, there's the shower water, things like that. But the most toxic of the pollution, and actually a lot of what it is what they call engine scrubber waste. And so these engine scrubbers are really a false solution, and it was trying to meet air emission standards. So instead of just paying slightly more for lower sulfur fuel that's already available, they installed these scrubber systems that use a bunch of seawater to wash some of this sulfur, but then they just dump all of that polluted water into the water. So in essence, you're just trading air pollution for water pollution, because you don't want to pay a little more for better fuel. So that's something that could be cut out right away. We could say, you know what, you're not welcome in Seattle if you're going to do that on your ship. And that would save a lot of water pollution. So if you're someone who cares about orcas, if you're someone who cares about the quality of your seafood, if you wish eventually we'd be able to swim safely in our waters again, that would be one of those really attainable things. Having shore power, where you plug in the ships when you're berthed at shore, to be mandatory and enforced. That would help us on a health level to reduce some of the health pollution here in Seattle. But of course, unfortunately, that's not really available in Alaska, where there's not necessarily enough energy to power that type of a system. And there's actually a lot of other things supporting the Clean Shipping Act with their lobbyists. But we have a whole list of these things actually on our website, again, seattlecruisecontrol.org, if folks want to check it out. But like Elizabeth said, number one, reduce the number of sailings each year, starting next year. And then each year, keep stair-stepping that down, which will give other communities that are currently dependent on cruise some time to slowly transition away from this toxic form of tourism and kind of beef up other things in order to not be hit all at once with this change. But that'll give us time while also, again, making actual movement in the right direction.
Oh, just one other thing. There used to be what was called the Alaska Ranger Program, where an outside observer would actually be on board the ship just when it was in Alaskan waters. And that was a way of making sure that they weren't, illegally dumping stuff over the side. It was just seeing that they were complying with at least the state regulations. And the Alaska has discontinued that program. We would like to see it instated on the entire route. So that's a simple thing that could be done.
And paid for by passenger fees. So this wouldn't impact people on a monetary level that are not going on cruises.
Yeah, no, I mean that those sound like some really effective strategies, and I really like the idea of pressuring other ports around the world to be like, hey, you shouldn't take these, really impactful in terms of the environment cruise ships coming into port constantly unless you enforce certain environmental standards, make sure that they're doing their part no matter where they're docked. I think that that would be something that would, I think, would be of benefit to a lot of people, not just in this country, but in other countries where the cruise industry is really prevalent as well. Any closing thoughts for all of our fellow listeners?
Yeah, I hope that when you see cruise ship ads in the future, you'll look beyond the beautiful pictures and think about all the things we've said, that it's really a very destructive, polluting, exploitative business. So hope you'll keep that in mind.
And I hope you'll join us on Saturday, April 6th for our rally and press conference. Again, show up, help support these youth, and come meet other great people that want to help protect people and the planet.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a production of WOB Radio out of the Tacoma branch of the IWW. If you're interested in organizing, you can find us at IWW.org, or you can reach out to us directly on Facebook from our Tacoma branch Facebook page or from WOB Radio. Thank you so much for listening, and solidarity.